China says it is firmly against U.S. unilateral sanctions against Iran as Tehran and Beijing begin implementing a major agreement. Yemen dismisses the U.N. Security Council's call for the release of an Emirati ship that it seized earlier this month carrying weapons and military equipment. And in Iran, coronavirus-related rates remain relatively low thanks to the country's mass vaccination campaign. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Miz. Thanks for joining us. China once again voices its firm opposition to unilateral sanctions imposed by the United States against Iran. Foreign Minister Wang Yi says the U.S. is using its sanctions and political manipulation to interfere in Iran's internal affairs. Wang voices support for the ongoing efforts in Vienna to restore the 2015 deal from which the U.S. withdrew and reimposed sanctions on Iran. He says the U.S. is primarily responsible for all the troubles around the tattered agreement. The top Chinese diplomat made the comments as he hosted his Iranian counterpart, Hossein Amir Abdullahian, in the city of Wuxi on Friday.
This is the first time Hossein Amir Abdullahian is visiting China as Iran's foreign minister. The one-day trip came upon an invitation by his Chinese counterpart, Wang Yi. The visit marked the beginning of the implementation of the much-anticipated Sino-Iranian Pact, known as the 25-Year Strategic Partnership.
In this trip, we agreed to start implementing the 25-Year Comprehensive Strategic Cooperation Agreement. I also delivered a written message from our president to his Chinese counterpart, Mr. Xi, to implement the agreement.
The Sino-Iranian Comprehensive Strategic Partnership was announced in a joint statement during a visit by Chinese President Xi Jinping to Iran in 2016. In 2020, Wang Yi and then-Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif signed the pact in Tehran. So far, it has been revealed from the agreement. But the two
technological and economic areas, as well as tourism and other subjects that are covered by the 25-year agreement.
During the talks, China reiterated its support for Iran's nuclear rights in the ongoing visit aimed at removing U.S. sanctions, which Washington reinstated against Iran in 2018 after it unilaterally left the 2015 deal. As signatories to the accord, China and Russia both urge Washington to remove the sanctions as the only path to rejoin the deal.
Today, we extensively discussed the Vienna talks over the removal of U.S. sanctions on Iran. China's representative in Vienna, along with his Russian counterpart, plays a positive part in advocating Iran's nuclear rights and the removal of the anti-Iran sanctions.
China is Iran's number one trade partner. This partnership heavily relies on Iran's oil supply to energy-hungry China. Reports show that in 2021, and despite U.S. oil embargoes on Iran, China tripled its oil imports from Iran. Now the implementation of the new pact will guarantee the flow of Iran's oil to China and cement the two sides' trade ties. It goes without saying that China and Iran are strategic partners in every sense. And the top Iranian diplomat's trip is a sign that Tehran is determined to keep that path with Beijing. The two sides are expected to engage even more as the 25-year strategic partnership has moved from paper to practice. Yusuf Jalali from the Chinese city of Wuxi.
Yemen dismisses the UN Security Council's call for the release of an Emirati flagship that it seized earlier this week. Sana says the vessel was carrying weapons and military equipment, not dates or toys for children. Yemen's deputy foreign minister says that the cargo was destined for extremist groups who threaten the lives of Yemeni people. Hossein al-Azi says the ship belongs to a country involved in a devastating war on Yemen. The vessel has entered Yemen's territorial waters in breach of international law. The Yemeni official says that it is regretful that the UN body has turned to a platform for misleading public opinion and shamelessly demonstrating solidarity with murderous regimes. The Security Council issued a statement on Friday urging an immediate release of the Rabi, which was seized off Yemen's western port city of Hodeida. In Iran, COVID-related figures remain relatively low thanks to the country's mass vaccination campaign. Only 18 deaths in the past day. That takes the total number of fatalities to around 132,000. Some 1,400 new infections were also diagnosed, bringing the total caseload to over 6 million. Iran witnessed a record number of infections and deaths back in August, but the figures began declining since the authorities implemented a vaccination campaign nationwide. Over 125 million jabs have been administered, covering the majority of the population. India's Supreme Court has ordered a probe into recent incidents of hate speech against the country's Muslims. The investigation follows public outrage and people questioning Prime Minister Modi's silence and inaction. We've discussed the issue in our news review program. Let's listen to what our guests had to say.
Welcome to this edition of the News Review. In this edition, India's Supreme Court has ordered a probe into recent incidents of hate speech against the country's Muslims. The investigation follows huge public outrage with people questioning Prime Minister Narendra Modi's silence and inaction. Munawar Zaman has more from New Delhi.
India's Supreme Court has notified the northern state of Uttarakhand and New Delhi authorities to investigate the recent incidents of vicious hate speeches by several Hindu religious leaders, which called for Muslim genocide. The petitioners stated such incidents, if not addressed with the rule of law, pose a grave threat not just to the unity and integrity of the country, but also endanger the lives of millions of Muslim citizens. Activists call it encouraging move.
The Muslims of this country, when they decided to stay back and not migrate to Pakistan, the reason was that they believed in a system which is not based on any religion, which a constitution, an idea of India which is plural, which is diverse, which respects each and every citizen equally.
Since the partition of the subcontinent in 1947, Indian Muslims have been subjected to widespread discrimination, but it all swelled after the emergence of BJP in 2014. The community has been subjected to deliberate vicious hate campaigns and violence. Several Muslim organizations accuse the government of Prime Minister Modi of turning blind eye towards the issue. Last few years have been overly violent, considering the growing hostility towards the community. Experts say this could tear apart social harmony in a diversified country which has a long-standing history of terrific communal violence. Anti-Muslim sentiments have risen extensively. Since last few years, Hindu mobs have unleashed striking attacks on Muslims, lynched dozens of people, mainly Muslims and Dalits, accusing them of indistinct activities in addition to other systematic repression. Activists call it the pretext of a larger political agenda to turn India into a supremacist Hindu nation.
This is part of the larger design. I mean, it is not that they are doing it on their own. They know that they have state patronage. They have patronage from the political party, the BJP and the RSS. And so they are emboldened.
As India's state elections draw near, anti-Muslim rhetoric is flaring across the country, which experts call a political gimmick to polarize the community, therefore playing a divide-and-rule policy. Activists, however, maintain that resistance to the violent and divisive politics is also growing. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Now to discuss that further, we're joined by Mr. Masood Shajare, chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission in London, and also Said Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator, who is joining us also from London. Thanks to both of you gentlemen for joining us on this edition of the News Review. Let's begin with Mr. Shajare. In your opinion, why is it that Narendra Modi is not showing the kind of reaction that one would expect towards these hate crimes?
Well, actually, I think he is showing the reaction that one expects, because if you look at his history, when he was in charge of Gujarat, that was the one of the first times that some genocidal act and mob attacked Muslims. And he was never brought to account on this. And, there were reports, including from ourselves, highlighting how many people were deliberately targeted by the Hindu mobs. Now, the ideology of Hindutva, which is sort of goes forward saying that India is for Hindus and Muslims and Christians have got no right to it. And as a matter of fact, they, you know, teaching it to the kids and, you know, the whole community, saying that these people have come and taken over Hindu heritage. And so that sort of to demonize and disown the right of Muslims and others, including Christians, is where we are now. And the fact that so little is being done so regards incident, it's actually a testimony which direction India is going. This present government is part and parcel of Hindutva ideology, which denies the right of anyone else and indeed promotes a very, very extreme Hindu ideology, which is basis, I believe, for future genocide. And if something is not done now immediately, we are sleepwalking into genocide.
Okay, Mr. Shajar, since you mentioned that something needs to be done, I would like to address this question to Said Mohsen Abbas. Now, India's Supreme Court has ordered a probe in these recent incidents. Do you think this is going anywhere?
Well, on evidence of the way legislators and the legal system has been operating since the BJP certainly has come into power, I don't really expect a great deal to happen. We've seen the legislature fail in terms of any kind of justice on the incident which really brought this whole Hindutva movement into the front line politically, and that was the destruction of the Babri Mosque. That, I know, formally in 2019 was legally sanctioned, even though it had been taken over long ago, by the judiciary. So I think that there's an institutional Islamophobia which is very much embedded now within the system, and the government itself rewards such institutional Islamophobia. It seems, for instance, I mean, Amit Shah himself, the right-hand man of Modi, has said that Muslim migrants are termites and that they should be thrown in the Bay of Bengal. Now, when you've got leaders at the top saying this publicly, it's no surprise that these other fellows are distributing hate crime publicly off platforms.
Thank you very much, Said Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator, and Mr. Masoud Shajare, chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, both from London. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for your comments. And thanks for following this edition.
Coming up next, hashtag trending will bring you social media's hottest conversations and debates surrounding the issue of Palestine.
Hey everyone, Ali Reza here, back with another hashtag trending, and today we'll also be talking about the issue of Palestine. I mean, well, technically about the Israeli Judaization policy of Palestinian lands and its latest manifestation in the desert of Al-Naqab. Stay with me. This time around, we're taking you to the desert of Al-Naqab, where the Bedouin Palestinians have been dwelling in for decades now. But now, the occupation forces are after their ancestral lands under the pretext of an afforestation project.
The protest started peacefully. Nobody was harmed. We were chanting. We were talking. It is our right to protest for what we believe in today as Palestinian Bedouins living in occupied Palestine. It is our right, yet they do not give us our rights. They treat us like refugees in our own land. This is not their land. This is ours. We have been here before 1948, before Israel became Israel. We are not refugees. This is a family. There is a graveyard here with someone who is 400 years old. A whole generation of death in the graveyard is here. Women getting arrested.
The desert of Al-Naqab has historically been inhabited by Arab tribes or Bedouins, but most of them are not recognized by Israel and thus are deprived of most basic services such as water or electricity and now this. All right, let's get the comments wheel spinning with this first one by Al-Mayadeen English. The Israeli occupation has been conducting mass arrests against Palestinians in resource-rich Naqab, which Israel looks to turn into a military base. On to the next one by Quds News Network. This Palestinian young man was protesting against the Israeli ethnic cleansing of Al-Naqab lands in the southern occupied Palestine before he was brutally arrested, not by the Israeli occupation forces, but by the colonial state-backed settlers. On to our next comment by Birnz500. How many cowards of the Apartheid Defense Force does it take to arrest a 12-year-old girl in the process of conducting ethnic cleansing and land theft in the Naqab? A whole battalion, I suppose. But perhaps the better question is, how many Palestinians should die before it's too many? Or how many Palestinians should die before the world takes notice? The whole thing is just insane. Moving on to our next batch of comments, Anghadu al-Naqab, that is my attempt at pronouncing Arabic letters correctly, wrote, a house was set on fire by the bombs fired by the occupation, hashtag save al-Naqab. Moving on to our next comment by Sarah Wilkinson. She said, this license to abuse Palestinian children who are simply defending their homes in al-Naqab looks like an Israeli blood sport, hashtag save al-Naqab. Another instance of utter insanity. I mean, what do these people want? But fortunately, not everyone is blind to the truth on the ground, just like Harry Potter star Emma Watson had that Instagram post of showing solidarity with the Palestinians, and also like these tweets. V Palestine tweeted, Palestinian students protesting in Tel Aviv University in solidarity with Palestinians in Al-Naqab. Let's move on to our final photo and comment of the day coming from Brighton BDS. BDS stands for Boycott, Divest, Sanctions, an anti-Israeli apartheid movement. They wrote, total solidarity with all those resisting the Israeli state's attempts to force them from their land. That'll do it for this edition of Hashtag Friendly. Stay tuned for the rest of the world news.
And that is it for world news. Bye-bye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Humanitarian organization CARE International has published its annual report of the 10 countries that had the least attention in online articles in five languages around the world in 2021. Despite each having at least 1 million people affected by war and conflict or climate disasters. We now present you an article written by Saeed Kamali Dehan under the heading, World's Poorest Bear Brunt of Climate Crisis. 10 underreported emergencies. Please stay with us for more of Saeed Kamali Dehan's article. From Afghanistan to Ethiopia, about 235 million people worldwide needed assistance in 2021. But while some crises received global attention, others are lesser known. Humanitarian organization CARE International has published its annual report of the 10 countries that had the least attention in online articles in five languages around the world in 2021. Despite each having at least 1 million people affected by war and conflict or climate disasters. Laurie Lee, The Chief Executive Officer of CARE International UK said the findings from a collaboration between the charity and International Media Monitoring Service, Meltwater, highlighted how the accelerating climate crisis is fueling many of the world's emergencies. Laurie Lee said, "There is deep injustice at the heart of it. The world's poorest are bearing the brunt of climate change, poverty, migration, hunger, gender inequality, and even more scarce resources, despite having done the least to cause it." He said, "Add COVID-19 into the mix and we see decades of purported progress towards tackling inequality, poverty, conflict, and hunger disappearing before our eyes. The number of people in need of humanitarian aid is expected to rise to 274 million people this year, or 1 in 28 people, and more than 84 million people have been uprooted." Laurie Lee highlighted the impact of the UK's 2021 foreign aid budget cut, saying that it resulted in over £166 million less in humanitarian aid reaching the 10 countries mentioned in this report compared to 2019. Zambia, first on the list. Zambia has 1.2 million malnourished people and about 60% of the 18.4 million population living below the international poverty line of $1.90 a day. Women produce 60% of the country's food supply, but families headed by women faced higher poverty rates than those headed by men. Food insecurity in Zambia has primarily been blamed on prolonged drought, but rising corn prices and flooding have also contributed. Ukraine, currently in the news amid renewed tensions between Russia and the West. In Ukraine, 3.4 million people were in need of assistance in 2021 after years of conflict. The report said while a comprehensive political solution for the conflict is still not in sight, people in eastern Ukraine are daily forced to put their lives on the line. Along the 420-kilometer contact line that separates Ukrainian government-controlled territory from that of the separatists in the east of the country, the situation is particularly dangerous. Malawi. Malawi is facing a food insecurity crisis, with 17% of the population severely malnourished. Droughts, floods, landslides have all been predicted to worsen over the coming years. Cyclone Idai in 2019 severely affected harvests and left tens of thousands of people displaced. Chikondi Chabuta, advocacy lead for CARE International in Malawi, said, "The climate crisis is hitting people here earlier and much harder than the people of the global north. We are already seeing real-life consequences with delayed rainfall, heavy and destructive rainfall, unpredictable rainfall patterns, infertile soil, and destroyed harvests." Central African Republic. In Central African Republic, where civil war has exacerbated the humanitarian crisis, half of the population face food insecurity. A ceasefire agreement struck in October of 2021 is fragile, and more than 700,000 people have been internally displaced, more than half of them children. The Central African Republic is ranked second to last globally on the Human Development Index. The report said, on average, a child attends school for just under 4 years, and girls for only 3 years. About 30% of children are in work. Guatemala. Poverty, violence, and the climate crisis are leading problems in Guatemala, which is on the migratory route to Mexico and onwards to the United States. Two-thirds of the population live on less than $2 a day, and 38% of the population face food insecurity. The report said camps sheltering those sent back to Mexico are overcrowded, meaning many live on the streets of Guatemala. Guatemala is considered one of the world's most dangerous countries, with 3,500 murders in 2020 alone. The report said, although about 3.3 million people in the country rely on humanitarian aid, the frequent occurrence of violence is in many cases a barrier to accessing urgently needed assistance. Colombia. Nearly 5 million people live under the control of armed groups in Colombia, and 6.7 million people are dependent on humanitarian aid. Food insecurity has been blamed on an economic recession caused by the pandemic. It has particularly affected indigenous communities in Colombia, those uprooted internally, and 1.8 million refugees, mainly in northern Colombia. Burundi, ranked as the country gaining the least attention in 2020, Burundi was seventh in 2021, with 2.3 million of the 12.6 million population were in need of humanitarian assistance. The country secured only 27% of the $195 million pledge in aid. Extreme weather, hunger, and political unrest were among the challenges faced by the people of Burundi. In a country where 90% of the people rely on small-scale agriculture, only a third of land is suitable for cultivation due to drought, floods, and landslides. Niger is deeply vulnerable to climate disasters. Persistent droughts and recurring floods have had catastrophic consequences for Niger. Nearly 3 million people rely on humanitarian aid. About 1.8 million children need food assistance, and almost half of all the children under the age of 5 are malnourished in Niger. Militias in eastern and northern Niger have caused 313,000 people to be displaced as of last September. The report said providing emergency relief is often hindered by the fact that infrastructure is destroyed, operation areas are marked by violence, and rural areas are difficult to access. Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe has acute food insecurity with increasingly extreme climate conditions and economic mismanagement, causing 6.6 million people to need humanitarian aid. More than a third of the population, 5.7 million people, lack sufficient food in Zimbabwe. The report said the harvests in many rural areas are not sufficient to secure basic food supplies and other needs. In these regions of Zimbabwe, households must rely on local markets when supplies are depleted, but the prices there are unaffordable for many. Honduras. Poverty and violence have exacerbated the humanitarian situation in Honduras, prompting many to leave for the United States. According to a 2020 study, about 70% of the population of Honduras lives in poverty. There have been problems with farming because of drought, hurricanes, and floods. The country has 937,000 displaced people, the highest number in Latin America. The report said, in Honduras, people therefore often talk about poverty being female, as it is mostly women who stay behind with the children.
first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagian.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Surah Isra tells Banu Israel, or he tells us that he told Banu Israel in their book, لَتُفْسِدَنَّ فِي الْأَرْضِ مَرَّتَيْن. There will be two times that you will create corruption, cause problems in the various forms on the earth. لَتُفْسِدُنَّ فِي الْأَرْضِ مَرَّتَيْن وَلَتَعْلُنَّ عُلُوًا كَبِيرًا. And you're going to reach an elevation in terms of your status and rank on earth in an earthly way. Being raised in status in an earthly way is what Fir'aun did, the one that Banu Israel fled from. The Quran describes Fir'aun to be someone that ala fil ard wa ja'ala ahliha shi'a. He ascended in an earthly way on earth. An earthly way of ascension, not a divine and heavenly way of ascension, is where you move up the ranks of authority in an earthly way again. There were prophets that had authority. Musa had authority. Dawood had authority. Sulaiman had authority. Various prophets have had authority. They've had governance. In fact, the governance of Sulaiman, no king on earth has had the type of governance that Sulaiman had. Sulaiman, ala nabiyyina wa alihi wa alayhi salam, was knowledgeable of the language of even animals. He spoke to them, he heard them, he controlled them. They were under his rule, not only human beings, jinn, but also animals. Ants spoke to him, he heard them, he spoke back. Birds, there were armies that were under his control and authority. And what he was able to accomplish and on this earth was greater than whatever any other king, as he asked Allah. That's what he asked for, and God said, God gave it to him. Yet that was not moving up the ranks in an earthly way. That was a divine way. A divine way of authority is without corruption. A divine authority, rule over birds, rule over ants, rule over animals, authority over jinn, authority over ants, is to guide them and to help them reach their full potential, not allow those who want to cause corruption and evil and hurt and harm others spiritually, physically, mentally, psychologically. This is a divine way of rule and authority and governments. That's not referred to as ala fil ard, a Fir'auni way, a corrupt way of acquiring that rank, coming to rule over places in a corrupt way, causing corruption, destroying lands, destroying homes, destroying lives, killing people unjustly. That is. So the Quran in Surah Isra tells us that in their book they were told that they will reach a level of authority on earth that they will cause corruption with. This will happen twice. They were told in their book it will happen twice. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala told them, when you do that, we will send our servants, other human beings, as Allama Tabatawi rahmatullah alayh correctly says, Allah here is not praising the people that are involved in this. Rather, he's referring to them as his servants. And another verse, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala refers to everything in the heavens and the earth. He says, لِلَّهِ جُنُودُ السَّمَوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ. Everyone, people, good or bad, are all جُنُودُ السَّمَوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ. They're all Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's troops. They're all Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's army. And they're under his command. So these ibad that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says he will bring them and he will overthrow you. He says when you, he tells Banu Israel, the Jews, that twice in their book they were told this, that you will elevate yourself, ascend, move up the ranks of authority and power twice. And when you do, and you cause fasad and corruption, we will send our troops, other people, good or bad, that's not important. We will send people to remove you from that position. And then it says, إِنْ أَحْسَنْتُمْ أَحْسَنْتُمْ لِأَنفُسِكُمْ وَإِنْ أَسَأْتُمْ فَلَهَا. If you do good, the good goes back to you. If you do bad, the bad goes back to you. You cause corruption on earth, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is going to remove you from the blessings, the benefits, the treasures, the resources, the comfort, the security, all those things He gave that you use instead of using it to deal with people, to deal with the resources, to deal with yourselves. According to what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, according to what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants, instead of doing that, you created fasad and corruption. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, we will send people that will remove you. That's the result of your actions in this world. There's results, there's consequences, there are repercussions, retributions, punishments in the hereafter. But here on earth, as a people, as a nation, not this person or that person, every person is on their own in the hereafter. As a nation, God will give you that rank. You will be moving up the ranks. You will have numbers. You will have population. You will have unity. You will have security. You'll have monetary resources. But you will use that to transgress. You want more resources. You will steal. You will use ways and methods that God has forbidden you. You will use them to gain more and more. This is fasad. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, when you do that, we will send. And then He says, the second time you do this, again, we will send the same people. They will come. This is historic and it's been documented. Of course, those historic documents documenting the removal of the Jews from the Holy Land. And this happened twice. By the same rulers, whatever of that history documented in other books that does not conform with the wording of the Qur'an, we don't believe that that's true. The Qur'an is the most accurate account of that history. It's not a complete account. It doesn't tell us the details. So we have these other references that tell us some of the details of how those things happen. But any part of those details that does not conform with the principles that are mentioned in the Qur'an, they are lies that have been added to history and so on and so forth. Besides the point here is God told Banu Israel in their book that you will accomplish authority, establish authority and reign and power and superiority on earth in an earthly way, and you will use that, you will cause a lot of corruption on earth, and every time you do that, or both these times that you do that, we will send a people that will remove you from that and destroy you.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Adi عليم حال حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم را
وصل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The limelight.
Following the 6th of January attack on the U.S. Capitol, American social media platforms have been scrutinized for amplifying calls to violence, spreading misinformation, and serving as an organizing tool for the rioters. We're prepared for you an article written by Carrie Paul. The piece is titled Breeding Grounds for Radicalization. U.S. Capitol attack panel signals loss of patience with big tech. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. Please stay with us for more of Kerry Paul's article. U.S. House Select Committee investigating the 6th of January insurrection at the Capitol has ordered several social media firms to hand over data relating to the attack, a significant step towards transparency that could have broader privacy implications. The committee on Thursday, 13th of January, subpoenaed Twitter, Meta, Alphabet, and Reddit for private messages exchanged on the platforms about the attack, as well as information regarding moderation policies that allowed communities to remain online, even as they incited violence in early 2021. Congressman Benny Thompson, the chairman of the House Select Committee, said the committee was seeking to answer two key questions: how the spread of misinformation contributed to the violent attack, and what steps social media companies took to prevent their platforms from being breeding grounds for radicalizing people to violence. The subpoenas mark an escalation in the committee's efforts to get answers from the technology companies. Benny Thompson added in his letter that the subpoenas came after months of engagement with the firms and that the four companies had so far ignored requests for information. He said, "We cannot allow our important work to be delayed any further." The panel in August asked 15 technology companies, including the four subpoenaed on Thursday, 13th of January, as well as TikTok, Snapchat, Parler, and 4chan, for records related to the riot. In letters sent recently to the technology firms, Benny Thompson lamented their lack of response. In a letter to Meta's chief executive officer, Mark Zuckerberg, Benny Thompson said that despite repeated and specific requests for documents related to Facebook's practices on election misinformation and violent content, the committee had still not received these materials. Meta claimed in a statement that it planned to produce the documents requested. Reddit also told The Guardian it had received the subpoena and planned to comply with the requests. Twitter declined to comment. Google did not respond to requests for comment. One of the representatives of these technology firms claimed, as Chairman Benny Thompson said recently, Facebook is working with the committee to provide the necessary information. Since then, Meta has produced documents to the committee on a schedule committee staff requested, and we will continue to do so. Following the 6th of January attack, social media platforms have been scrutinizing for amplifying calls to violence, spreading misinformation, and serving as an organization tool for the rioters. Last March, lawmakers grilled the chief executive officers of Google, Twitter, and Facebook about the platform's role in the Capitol attack on 6th of January. And in the months since, the major platforms have also claimed they are creating initiatives to curb the spread of misinformation through their products. But still, much about the content moderation policies of major technology firms remains black box, with executives slow to reveal details of how misinformation and hate speech is moderated and how many resources are dedicated to mitigating such issues. Now, increased transparency could come by means of subpoena. For lawyers, the problem came even more acutely into focus with papers leaked by the whistleblower Francis Hogan in October of 2021, which showed how Facebook failed to enforce policies that would rein in hate speech because they were detrimental to its bottom line. Speaking to Congress, Frances Hogan called for more transparency from Facebook and other companies, including an independent oversight board. In a letter to Meta's chief executive officer, Mark Zuckerberg, the select committee cited revelations from Frances Hogan requesting access to the company's internal analyses of the spread of misinformation and calls to violence relating to the 2020 presidential election. In particular, the House Committee requested more information on the Stop the Steal movement and how it was regulated. A Stop the Steal Facebook group amassed hundreds of thousands of members and was used to coordinate some of the actions on 6th of January. Imran Ahmed, Chief Executive Officer of the Center for Countering Digital Hate, said while Facebook eventually took it down, other related pages stayed online. Imran Ahmed said, "It is absolutely crucial to understand the decision-making process that led them to leave those pages online, how they executed enforcement of their policies against violence, encouraging violence, intimidation, extremism, and hate." Similarly, Reddit has been requested to provide information on its community R, the Donald. That group was banned from Reddit in June of 2020. But its community migrated to another platform where many actions of 6th of January were planned. Lawmakers were also seeking materials from Alphabet, the parent company of YouTube, because the video platform hosted significant communications by key players in the Capitol attack, including Donald Trump's former chief strategist, Steve Bannon, and rioters live-streaming their movements on 6th of January. Activists say the need to hold companies accountable for how their policies contributed to the Capitol riots should be held in balance with civil rights and privacy protections. Evan Greer, Deputy Director of Digital Rights Group Fight for the Future, said the subpoenas may bring up privacy concerns. Evan Greer said forcing companies to hand over private messages of its users could have major privacy implications. They said, "It's essential to remember that government surveillance and demands for data from private companies are primarily weaponized
against marginalized communities. The white supremacists who stormed the Capitol deserve to be held accountable, but we should never cheer on expansions of surveillance or government overreach. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
مجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Jesus never hesitated to fight against evil and call people to piety. January the 3rd, 1994. Jesus Christ was equipped with the power of performing miracles and carried a divine message for humanity which saved them from the darkness of polytheism, atheism, ignorance and oppression and guided them towards justice, knowledge and worshipping God. He never hesitated to fight evil and call people to piety throughout his life. And this is the lesson which all Christians and Muslims who believe in the prophethood of Jesus Christ should learn. Today, humanity is in need of these teachings more than ever before. And Islam, which is a complement to real Christianity, has put calling humanity to piety and moral perfection high on its priority list. Making use of the great powers of nature through their God-given knowledge, misguided humans tend to tread a different path, and this makes the duty of the followers of divine faiths even heavier. The domineering powers and governments of the world have made life difficult for nations and individuals and do not refrain from inflicting any type of oppression on them. They do those things in the name of Christianity. These powers are, in fact, totally unaware of the teachings of Jesus Christ.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Saint Mary is a role model for believers. August 7th, 2004. At the opposite end of the scale, Allah the Exalted mentions two women as role models for believers. And Allah sets forth, as an example to those who believe, the wife of Pharaoh. "Behold," she said, "O my Lord, build for me, in nearness to you, a mansion in the garden, and save me from the Pharaoh and his doings." The Holy Quran, Surah 66, verse 11. One was the wife of the Pharaoh, and the other was Hazrat Maryam, and Maryam the daughter of Imran. The Holy Quran, Surah 66, verse 12. As for the first woman, she was not beguiled by the Pharaoh's palace. She was a woman who was raised in a Pharaoh-like manner, and most probably her parents and household members were the descendants of the same Taghuts. She was living with utmost comfort and welfare, but faith in Musa conquered her heart, and as a result, she believed in him. When she began to believe and know the path, she abandoned all the comfort and welfare, and she was no more attracted to that great palace. She said, "O my Lord, build for me, in nearness to you, a mansion in the garden." She preferred a house in paradise, and she attached no significance to the material life. As for Hazrat Maryam, and Maryam the daughter of Imran, who guarded her chastity, and we breathed into her body of our spirit. She preserved her chastity. These are human values.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.